Future Crop, podcast aiming to abolish the idea of good and bad taste in music, because it's about time we give credit to music in general. Welcome to the first episode of Ode to Crap's second season. Today, I am delighted to have American artist Desmond Myers on the podcast. As Desmond was passing through Paris when we recorded the episode, I thought it would be a good idea to talk about a crappy track he likes, given that he had just released his first ever solo album, Shadow Dancer. As I said previously, Desmond Myers released his first album, Shadow Dancer, in 2021. On this album, you can hear this beautiful single entitled Playing With Fire, which came out in 2020.
And though I love to break the rules, some things break and are repaired. I'm playing with fire. And it's gonna burn me down.
You can also hear this great track, Shadows, which is as classy as the whole album is. Go discover this artist if you don't already know him.
It's a game of choice in action. I believe in the love that's so afraid of nothing. I'm tired of creeping around the truth, the way I lose my home. So I'm just as much a man for you. When I'm dancing in the shadows, I could be your spotlight.
Hi Desmond.
Hey Reva, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Doing great. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so how long have you been in Paris actually?
I've been in Paris for a week.
All right.
Or a little bit more than a week, yeah.
Okay, lovely. Okay Desmond, you know what? I'm just going to ask you what your crap is today.
Okay, so I'm so excited. Like, this has become like a mini passion for me, what we're going to talk about today. So first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm a fan. I like love what you do.
I've been listening
to a few episodes. And we're going to talk about Garth Brooks today.
Exactly. What is the song?
So the song is probably his biggest hit, or at least the one that is the most nostalgic for me. It's called Friends in Low Places.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's from his second album.
Yeah, second album.
Okay.
Yeah.
We may be through, and you'll never hear me complain. Cause I got friends in low places where the whiskey drowns and the beer chases my blues.
So, first of all, what about this song is like so interesting in your opinion?
Well, this song, I think the most fascinating thing, I think it's been really a passion for me, why I'm so excited to talk about it today, is because it's just wild. Like, his story, I feel like we're going to have to go back and forth between how I feel about him versus, like, just the weirdness of his story.
Yeah.
And trying to explain that to French people.
Yeah.
Is going to be, like, is really fascinating because there's so much context. It's almost like if you were to meet someone, they'd never heard of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you have to be like, okay, well, it's this thing that's, like, really big. And you, like, try to explain it, right?
Exactly.
So, like, there's like, the aspect of just talking about him and how popular he is.
Yeah.
And the just kind of insane facts associated with his career.
Mm.
But then there's also a lot of heavy nostalgia for me about,
yeah,
like, really, like, some of my earliest memories revolve around particularly that song.
All right.
So, yeah, it's like, I'm a big Beatles fan, and I always say, like, I don't remember hearing the Beatles for the first time. Like, it feels like I was born and I had the entire Beatles catalog already just pre-downloaded, like, Matrix style.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same way with his songs. Like, but almost even, and I'm a huge Beatles fan, but it's almost even stronger memories because they're so early of this music. I could go on and on about all that, but that's kind of the initial, the initial setup, I guess, chose Garth Brooks. Yeah.
So you don't remember like the exact moment you came across this particular song then?
Yes and no, because like I don't remember, like I said, I kind of always remember knowing about it. Yeah. And it also, like, these records came out like literally when I was born. So it's like I was too little to like experience them coming out because they were out. Like, there was like the first album's like 1989. I'm pretty sure the second one's like 1991. I was born in 1992.
Okay.
So it's like they're already out before I'm born. They're already huge. Mm. But I do have like these really specific memories of my brother. So I have three brothers. Just for quick, I guess, can I do some backstory?
Yeah, go on. Yeah.
Cool. So I'm from North Carolina. I grew up on a bull farm. Mm-hmm. And I have three brothers. And my brothers are all like quite a bit older. Like we have 7 years apart each. So,
okay.
So I have one brother is 21 years older than me, then 14, then 7. So,
fucking hell.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. So, and there's some math that I get. We don't have to get into it, but it makes sense when I explain it, but it's not important right now. But so when Garth Brooks was big and the association I have with it is my brother Christopher, who's 14 years older than me, he was like in high school, you know, like he was like getting his license when I was like 2 years old, you know, because he was like 16, 17. He was starting to date, go on dates and stuff. And he would always take me on like to go meet girls because it was like, oh, I have this little brother, like he's cute and everything. And
you're the wingman.
I was like his wingman at like 2 years old, 100%. And my brother, like, first of all, he looks like Garth Brooks. And I think in my early memories, I thought he was Garth Brooks. Like, I think like, you know, in that 2 year old brain, I was like, he would sing Garth Brooks songs to me in the car, like making fun of me and like being silly and stuff. But then he kind of looked like him. And I think I just was like, well, that is my brother. And I just couldn't imagine anyone cooler. So I have these memories of like my brother's car, which always smelled good.
Okay.
And he was always trying to impress girls. And it's a very 90s thing. It's so 90s. It was like a 90s Camaro, which I think was older Camaro. But like he had a certain chewing gum, which a lot of people in the U.S. associate with the 1990s. It's called Big Red Chewing Gum.
Really?
Yeah. It was like a thing. It's so hard to explain all this stuff. But like, so yeah, like he had this, like the certain chewing gum, the interior of his car smelled good because he was always trying to impress girls.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, like your those, like the scent, like that's like a huge part of how we perceive memories.
Definitely.
So I've got like the auditory thing, the visual thing, and then the super strong. So like when I hear Friends in Low Places, I smell Big Red Chewing Gum.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Right. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah.
So it just, like, in some ways, I can't be objective about Garth Brooks because it transports me to, like, this whole part of my memory that is super nostalgic.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of, in a nutshell, how this stuff makes me feel.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I think that definitely makes sense. First, the part when you said that your brother kind of was Garth Brooks, in your eyes, because I do get that. Like, I've got my best friend, she's got like this uncle who would sing exactly like Cat Stevens.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was a kid and we would put like Cat Stevens on the car, I was like, that's him singing. Like, that is kids' logic, you know?
Yeah, kids' logic is like, there's no, they don't understand. Like, I have a daughter.
No.
She's totally like that. Like, she just assumes, like, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And the smell thing as well. Yeah. I completely understand that. So, why did you pick this song? Is it because it's like his huge hit, as you said, or is it because this one is like it hits differently for you?
Yeah, I think it's like the song that people probably associate with him the most.
Okay.
It is like the most ubiquitous hit, and it is the one that I have like a lot of memories of listening to.
All right.
There's another song off the same album. I think it's Two Fences is the album that it's off of.
Okay.
I could be wrong about that, but I think it's Two Fences, which is the second album, like you were saying.
All right.
It's called The Thunder Rolls. So that one's also like got a lot of memories attached to it. But yeah, I think this is probably like, I feel like I have a mission here to like also introduce him to like the French people. So I think like this is like a place to start. If you start with The Thunder Rolls, like it's like, you're going to be like, this sounds like Bon Jovi or something. Like, it's like, it's not country enough. Like, I feel like this is just such a, there's so much you can get into with how the song sounds. And I don't know, were you able to hear the song?
Yeah.
Because that's a problem too with Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
Right, and we'll get into that, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of hard, like, finding his stuff, like, on Spotify, but I'll just go on YouTube and listen to it. But
So, wait, there's stuff on YouTube that's not him, though.
I know.
Oh, yeah, you know. Yeah, got it.
I know. But I got the right link. But,
okay, cool.
Exactly, it is kind of hard finding stuff. And this is really surprising because, as you said, doing my research, I just realized that this guy was actually maybe the biggest country music singer in America. And like in France, we know like a bit of like country music from America, but we never talk about him for some reason. And I think this is why it's so interesting, because obviously you're in between both countries, so because you live in America, but you're also spending a lot of time in Paris and everything, and I'm guessing you're working with French and American artists.
Yeah.
And I think this is interesting because, like, thinking about this podcast, like, for example, if it was an American podcast, do you think you would have said that your crap is Garth Brooks?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Maybe not. No, I don't know what I would have picked. I would have to sit on it for a while. But, yeah, I think I would have maybe picked something else.
Yeah.
Just because everybody... Just because also, you had November Ultra on here, and I really liked her episode.
Yeah.
And I liked what she had to say about how she doesn't believe, like, necessarily in, like, guilty pleasures.
Exactly.
And I like Garth Brooks. Like, and he's the best representative of country music, I think. I don't think that there's, like, there's a couple of guys who, like, do it as well as he does. And I think a lot of people agree. He has a lot of crossover appeal. Like, he's like, if you don't like country music, you're probably still like him.
Yeah.
So he's definitely not like bad music.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So yeah. I would hesitate to call like this crap. I think it's more like really like just stealing what November Ultra said, like where it's more about like how people perceive country.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because people perceive country as this just worthless genre. And I'm not a big country fan. Like I grew up I'm from the South.
Yeah.
So like everyone listens to country and I don't. Like I'm just not a huge country fan personally, even though that's what I grew up around and that's like my culture 100%. It's just less like what I get into.
Okay.
But with him, I really make an exception. So I think that's why I chose that.
All right. Yeah. Because I think maybe like in France, we do get a lot of American culture for sure, like on like so many levels. But country music really is like a Southern thing from America that we don't usually get, you know, like we've got Bruce Springsteen, but that is pretty much it, you know? And I don't even think he's from the South anyway, but this is the guy we think of when we speak about country music, whereas you've got Garth Brooks literally right there doing, like, really American country music. And what did you listen to when you were a kid, if it wasn't Garth Brooks, because you said you weren't a country music fan?
Yeah, so my dad was actually, like, a huge rocker. He was a hippie in the 70s.
All
and
right.
So, like, that's, like, definitely, like, where I was... Great. That was like more what I was raised on. It was more actually my brother who listened to country.
All right.
So my dad was like big into Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, Jimi Hendrix.
Okay.
A lot of British stuff.
Yeah.
Jimmy's like both, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot of British like blues, and then just like also just like blues like Albert King, B.B. King, which for me is like more Southern than country. Really.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the real Southern music.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
And not to like compare them, but like, yeah, like I definitely got more like guitar, blues, rock, songwriter, and then R&B and a little bit of jazz too. So that's more like what I heard from my dad.
Okay.
My dad's like the person who showed me the most music when I was a kid.
Yeah. Okay. You said you did a bit of research on Garth Brooks.
Yes.
So tell me about the crazy things that you learned about him.
Okay, cool. So, like, Garth Brooks, for anybody who's listening who doesn't know, I just want to say, like, this is a guy who, like, it gets interesting and then it just gets weird and it just keeps getting stranger and stranger. There's, like, no end to the strangeness with this guy. So I was trying to find a way to, like, tell all this stuff. And I think the best is I'm just going to read off a few facts. And I actually wrote this down. I thought we were going to do the podcast in French, so I'm going to be, like, translating. So I'm sorry. My English isn't perfect here. So first fact, and this is according to businessinsider.com. So when I kept looking up, like, this information, I kept finding different statistics. So don't pay attention to the exact numbers that I say because I feel like there's a lot of dispute and some of this stuff is really weird the way they categorize it.
Okay.
But anyway, according to businessinsider.com, he's the best-selling solo artist of all time.
Fucking hell.
So, like, I He has 200 million sales globally, and 157 million of them are just in the U.S.
Really?
So that's like an insane, like when you compare that to like Prince or like a Pink Floyd or something, that's going to be more evenly distributed amongst like the different territories. So like the Beatles, for example, in the U.S., him and the Beatles are always neck and neck for who's number one.
All right.
So there's like...
Just like in your heart.
Just like in my heart right now. Really, the Beatles... Okay. So with that, we can be clear. It's the Beatles are number one above Garth. Sorry, Garth. But between him and the Beatles, it gets like a little bit technical.
All right.
So in the U.S., Garth is the winner.
Okay.
But internationally, the Beatles are like still beat him.
Okay.
But Garth has more certified diamond albums. So like a certified diamond album is 10 million units.
Fucking hell.
So the Beatles only have six. He has 10.
Only?
Yeah. So it's like, it's so weird how you, when you, if you think about that, because it's like the Beatles catalog is ultimately more listened to.
Yeah.
But then he has this insane fan base.
Mm.
And we'll get into like why he maybe sells more records, because I think we both like understand there's maybe a reason why he sells so much.
Yeah, yeah.
But he somehow just like, when he puts out a record, it's just guaranteed to just sell millions, like in a way that's just kind of unparalleled. So as you came across in your research, he limited his sales to he was like really anti-streaming, anti-internet for a long time. And he's like says YouTube is the devil and all this stuff. And it's not in like a weird way, not in like a religious way. Like he's just very pro artist.
Okay.
Like he really stood up for Taylor Swift and stuff like that.
Okay.
And so he didn't want his music on like Spotify or YouTube or anything.
That's why.
And so he kept his music off. And the only way until 2014 that you could buy a Garth Brooks album, from like 2001 to 2014, the only way you could buy a Garth Brooks album was at garthbrooks.com. It's the only play. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he didn't even do like deals with like Target and stuff.
Okay.
So it's like super direct to artist sales.
Yeah.
And that's why he's kind of like taken this road where he's just beating everyone.
Yeah.
Because everybody else is like streaming and there's falling behind him.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting when you look at it from that perspective
Too. You'd think this would actually not help him like selling his stuff, because like people would like, you know, I don't know, like, I couldn't be asked, you know, to just like go and buy his album on his website when I'm like, I could just be like streaming his music and I'd be like maybe a bit pissed off about it, so I wouldn't make like the effort, you know, to go and buy it. But people would actually go and buy it even more, which is pretty moving in a way.
It's very, very interesting. It's like, especially as an artist, it gives you a lot to think about,
you know,
about like your own power. And but obviously, okay, before all of that in the 90s, the guy's still like, you know, quadruple platinum, like four albums that basically like, you know, the week they came out, like sold like millions of copies. So like he's got like that built in fan base. And I think with Garth Brooks, it's like, you know, people who buy like one album a year.
Yeah.
I think throughout the 90s, those people just bought Garth Brooks albums. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you just like those, like you had this certain portion of the record buying public who like, he would just, everyone had his CD. Like, it's like you didn't even know. Remember like when U2 like forced us to have that album on iTunes?
Mm.
It was like that, but people like somehow paid money for it.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
Like you couldn't not buy it.
Yeah.
And this was at a time, you know, when Eminem is coming out, and his music is really different than Eminem's. It's really, and something I wanted to ask you about, or like something I find interesting, is like there's so, when I came to Europe, I didn't realize how much American culture you guys have.
Yeah.
Because in the U.S., we think, like, French people, we have this weird image that, like, French people hate the U.S., and it's like, comes from this Bush era bullshit, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't realize that, like, American culture, I was ignorant to the fact that American culture was so omnipresent in the world.
Yeah.
But it's always interesting to me to find things that are not able to, you guys don't take everything.
No, exactly.
There's things that can't be exported.
You're right.
So I actually have a question for you.
Tell me.
Like, you know, Garth Brooks is like something that is very American. It's very hard to export.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to find an equivalent in France of something that like, and I know that like generally French culture doesn't export in the same way that American culture does, but we still have a lot of appreciation in music circles for Gainsbourg, for Brel, for like, you know, just so many things. And then obviously like Phoenix, Daft Punk and all that stuff. So like, is there like someone who is like I've had this conversation with people, they've named people like Michel Sardou.
Yeah.
Is there like someone who you think is like a country artist, but like in a French way? And is it a weird question? I don't know.
I'd say like, our biggest singer in France, like the main guy, would be like Johnny Hallyday. Because like this guy was huge in France, and when he passed away, that was like everywhere on the news for like, honestly, for like a year. Like he was so huge. He was like ridiculous. There was Claude François as well, but he died like a long time ago. But these two guys, I think, are the main blokes that we've got in France. And I'm not sure that you would have heard of them much in America, right?
No. I mean, we're definitely like, you know, I think the way that Americans come into contact with French culture is through kind of a Parisian cliche, right?
Yeah.
So like Amélie Poulain.
Exactly.
And so anything that kind of can sell that sort of Piaf. And then Gainsbourg somehow gets roped in there
exactly.
too. I've never really listened to Johnny Hallyday, even though I've lived in France.
Yeah.
And Claude François, I know because of the My Way kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. The cover.
But yeah, do you feel like those two guys are like, they're like, it's just like so French, it's like hard to export in a way? Yeah.
I mean, Claude François was definitely really French. Mm. Like, he would do covers like of English bands in the early 60s because that's what like French artists would do back in the days. They would like translate the Beatles songs and just like sing them and be famous thanks to that. But honestly, like Johnny Hallyday, I think this guy was trying so hard to be American, actually, because like he was doing rock music, but like he was singing about like Tennessee and like he was kind of dreaming about America. But I think he never really got there because I don't know how, but there would still be like that French thing that would like, I don't know, stop him from like being famous in America. Whereas, like for example, Serge Gainsbourg was never trying to be American. He was like ridiculously French in everything he was doing. Or maybe there was a bit of like British culture,
thanks to
Jane Birkin and everything. Right. But because he was never really trying to be American and to get there, that's why it's kind of exotic. And this is why American people would listen to him and like fantasize about like France and Paris and all. Whereas Johnny Hallyday was singing in French, but everything about his music was kind of American because like he had huge productions and like doing rock music with electric guitars and everything. And because it sounded so American, but with a French language, I think maybe this is the reason why you never really heard.
Well, I think like when I think about our conception of France, this is literally like impossible for us to imagine. Like this is like we can't, like Americans can't imagine French people wanting to be American.
Yeah.
You know, like that doesn't, and I know that it exists now that I've lived here. I know that there's like square dancing in certain parts of France and there's like a whole cliche. I feel it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like there's like a cliche of like a guy who wears cowboy hats who like tries to do the American thing in France.
Definitely.
Like a certain character, right?
Yeah.
That's like so hard for us to imagine in American culture because we have this view that I don't like at all, but this view of like the completely self-obsessed, closed off French culture that is like anti-
Yeah,
American.
It's pretty accurate, though. You can say that. Like, definitely. I can see that, definitely. Because we do, like, I'd say, like, I think we're okay with European culture. Like, we are definitely close to British bands. Well, we do like them. We're not making the same music, but we do like British culture and everything. But I think, like, America is, there is this kind of, like, love-hate relationship in a way because, as you said, we've got a lot of American culture, but there are some things that we will never get, really, just like country music, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have much of country music in a way. And I think, like, it is a shame, but at the same time, it's kind of interesting because, like, French people who like country music from the US have to go and give it a listen and listen to like Garth Brooks or other American artists because we don't have it here.
Yeah.
Literally, we don't at all. I don't know why. As I said, maybe like the Bush years and things like that made us like kind of hate American culture.
Well, and then the same stupid propaganda on our side too. Like there's like, one of the reasons I really don't like a lot of country music is like there's, post 9/11, there became, and it's also interesting that we can bring it back to Garth Brooks here because I appreciate Garth Brooks because he never did this.
Yeah.
He is a Republican, but like.
Is he?
It's so weird because he just played at Biden's inauguration. He played at Obama's inauguration. He's played at almost every president's inauguration, but he was like, oh, I have a scheduling conflict for Trump's.
All right.
And one of the things that I really admire about him is the year I was born, I don't know if you know about the LA riots that happened in the U.S. in 1992.
No.
So that was the first big case of police brutality being showed to an American audience. It was a guy named Rodney King. And it was the first time that American audiences were really confronted with police brutality on our screens.
Okay.
And even though it existed, you know, for centuries. There was a collective sort of like, what the hell? Like there were riots in LA. They got really tense. I believe it was also Rodney King, and I believe it was the O.J. Simpson trial at the same time. I may not have everything right about this period, so apologize if I'm mixing two things up that are maybe not related, but I'm pretty sure it's Rodney King and O.J.
Okay.
And there were parts of the entire city of Los Angeles that were burned down during these riots. It was, you know, wildfires in California that can be pretty bad. And Garth was actually out there.
All right.
And he's from Oklahoma. And he was just so moved by this that he wrote a song called We Shall Be Free.
Okay.
And it actually got banned on a lot of country radio because it was so aggressively for country music, right? It's still not that aggressive. But it's like, but it was so aggressively, you know, trying to reconcile and trying to not be jingoistic or reactionary in this way. And he's always really never done the thing that I hate the most about country. There's another artist that I just can't stand. His name's Toby Keith.
Okay, don't know him.
Please don't ever look him up. but he, like, after 9/11, he made a couple of these just extremely, like, what you would think an American country artist would make.
Oh, no.
Pro-America, like, we're going to go get these people, and we're going to, like, just very, like, you know, military propaganda, just jingoism. And it kind of ruined country music, because country music was this... It had something that was like really proud of tradition for a while in the 90s. And most people, if you talk to them today, they really don't like modern country and where it's gone.
Right.
And I think like Garth represents for a lot of people, like he's represents the tradition. You know, he's a guy who's actually like, when you read about him, he was really influenced by Bob Dylan, by James Taylor. He actually wanted to do more of like a Don McLean type thing.
Okay.
And then he fell in love with George Strait, who's also a fantastic, like quality country artist. And started doing stuff like that. But it's unfortunate because today, like, country is, like, if you turn on modern country radio, like, personally, I can't listen to it. And a lot of people feel that way. And you have, like, great taste. You have a Beatles t-shirt on. You have a music blog. I'm quite sure that you would not appreciate it, you know?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah. So the one thing I want to say about Garth, too, is, like, he's not that. He's, you know, he's not, a full-on Democrat. I think he's like kind of like Michael Jordan in that way, where he's like, he's a little bit of a businessman.
Yep.
He's never going to pick one side.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's clear, and I appreciate through his choices, that he's never been on the wrong side of something. He's never said something super weird. He's done some super weird things, but he's never said anything weird. Yeah.
And I was checking like his Wikipedia page, and I think he's like an LGBTQ supporter, really, like the community.
Yeah, which is huge in country. I mean, and the country's getting more inclusive now. They're trying to, you know, change their image.
Which is good.
But yeah. He was doing that. You know, I don't know. I think we're about the same age.
I'm 26.
Yeah, so we're 92, so I'm 29. So we're more or less the same age. We grew up in the 2000s, basically. Even if we sometimes say we grew up in the 90s. But, like, I think the 2000s were a pretty homophobic time.
Yeah.
I think it's like, you know, we used to call anything that was bad was gay, right?
Yeah.
It's a really weird time.
I know.
For it to be gay. And as, you know, not that there was ever like a great time, but except maybe now, but even then. And he was doing things at a time when it wasn't necessarily, especially as a country artist, the easy thing to do. And I don't know, like looking back, I think he's aged well.
Yeah, I think, it says a lot about him. Like, he's probably just a really nice guy in the end.
It's fascinating. I don't know. What do you want to know? Like, I feel like I'm, like, kind of, I've got, like, so much energy about this subject.
Honestly,
I just
want you to be, like, passionate about him, and that is it, really. But, yeah, like, speaking about the song that you picked, I didn't really check the lyrics, but I think it's like...
So it is a very country song.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, it is a song about a man who is going, he crashes the wedding of his ex and he's got a couple of drinks in him.
Okay.
And he basically, you know, sings. Garth Brooks has a really romantic voice sometimes. He has an actually exceptional voice. Mm-hmm. And he's singing to her like, basically like, you know, I'll always be here. And like, I know that I'm breaking up the party. He's like, he says that he grabs the microphone and takes a glass of champagne when they're giving the toast. And he, you know, embarrasses her and he basically crashes the party and he's drunk. And
bless her.
He eventually, exactly, just being a total douche. And then he eventually says, like, you know, I'll show myself to the door. I've got friends in low places, and I'm going to go to the honky tonk and drink with them.
All right.
So this song, like, if you play this at a like, I do wedding bands a lot in like Atlanta and stuff, and this is a song that like either people request or they say don't play. So it's like
there's
one
no in between.
Yeah, there's no in between. So it's like either you love it or hate it, and it's a redneck song. Like, yeah. I come from redneck country. I can with authority tell you this is a redneck song. But I love it. Like, I really do, like, genuinely love it. And it's kind of indefensible in a way, but it's like, it's just, I think his voice is absolutely amazing. It's, yeah, it's got that, he has that classic,
yeah,
well, I guess I was wrong, that kind of thing. Like, you know what I mean? But it's just amazing. So yeah, that Friends in Low Places is about, yeah. It's about that. Yeah.
But it's really funny though. I think it's really funny because like you'd expect like a country guy to sing like about, I don't know, one of my episodes was with Safia Nolan, who's from Quebec, and she picked a song by Rascal Flatts.
Oh yeah.
Bless the Broken Road. And like she said, like you'd expect this guy to sing about like religion or love, you know, like just like about God and or loving a girl if you're a guy or something like that. But I think this is funny actually, like crushing your ex's wedding.
Yeah, and I don't know, like again, it's just some things are more powerful than yourself. Like if when I hear the first chords of that song, I'm instantly transported to my brother's Camaro in 1993 or whenever, and I smell that chewing gum that I was telling you about, and I think about like the way the interior, he had like the top of his car was always falling down,
yeah.
And he put thumbtacks in it to keep it up. And I just, yeah. I think he had a disc changer with all his CDs in it. He would, you know, poke me and change the words to the song to like something about me.
All right.
He's Big Brother stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not even like the song itself. It's Garth Brooks. It's that era. It's nostalgia, you know, and it's more powerful than,
yeah, yeah.
We're so susceptible to that.
Yeah. Let's say you're on a car ride, you're in France, mm-hmm. on the car ride with your French friends and you put this song on. What's going to be the whole reaction to this song?
Really, really fascinating question. that's so fascinating to ask that because that's what I would do in the, like when I was on tour with bands like Her.
Yeah.
I loved like trying to find things they didn't know,
yeah.
from the US. You know what I mean? They'd be like, have you heard this? Have you heard this? And I would put stuff like this on and it's never like positive.
Yeah.
It's like never like people are like, oh yeah, j'aime bien. It's never like that. It's always like, I think it just sounds so country.
Yeah.
That it's like, oh, it just sounds like country music, which is so cheesy to me.
Yeah. Which would be like different, I guess, if you played it like in America on a car ride with your American friends. They'd be like, yeah, this is Garth Brooks. Like, it's pretty basic, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, he's so famous. It's like putting on Billie Jean.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You've heard it so many times. And it's so like, it's funny, like yesterday, like on Instagram, I thought it was so funny. I was like reading about Garth Brooks, but I was in front of Radio France in Paris. And so I just made a story and I like sang one of his other songs, The Dance.
Yeah.
And I was like, who knows this? And I had like five people like, oh, Garth. They don't even say Garth Brooks. They just say, oh, it's Garth. It's Garth. It's Garth.
Oh, right.
It's like first name. Mm. There's no other Garth. No one can ever be named Garth again.
But they
like,
were just American people, though.
It was just Americans. Yeah. It was just Americans responding.
Yeah,
so
makes
sense. And no one in France responded. Like, no one
knows
that. So, yeah.
So are you into his whole stuff or is it just this album? Because like we met like before and I said, I didn't really know this guy. I'd heard of him because I worked at Les Arocs.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was just like writing a paper about Childish Gambino, and this
and
he covered Lost in You by Chris Gaines, who is a fictional singer who is actually Garth Brooks, which is complicated, but
right,
yeah,
right.
And so I gave it a listen and it was like, fuck me, this is amazing. Like, I love this song. So I always listen to it. I've been listening to it for like 2 years now.
Wild. That's so wild.
I love it. But I never really like got into Garth Brooks. So do you like everything about like his stuff? Like, do you like Chris Gaines, his fictional?
So I actually like started listening to the Chris Gaines stuff. Should we catch people up on who Chris Gaines is?
Because you can tell them about it.
So Chris Gaines is Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
But
basically
like, the other thing that I identify with Garth Brooks about is I feel like he's a fish out of water in the South. And that's very much me.
Okay.
I'm very bipolar with the way I feel about the South. It's kind of like my little brother. Like, I can pick on it. I can say what I want to about it, but I like have that inherent thing where I don't want people to make fun of it. You know what I mean? Even though we have a lot to criticize.
Yeah.
And that was weirdly reinforced the more I lived in France.
Mm.
The more, I think it's just homesickness, you know, and that kind of thing. But I think he had to do – back up. We're talking about Chris Gaines. So, like, I think Garth Brooks got started, but I think that he's a fan of a lot of different music. I think one of the reasons his music stands out is because it is influenced by, like we were saying, James Taylor, Don McLean, and that kind of stuff. And there are other songs in the Garth Brooks, like, discography that are on albums that I think you hear that more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know every Garth Brooks song. I always want to say that. But I just recently started listening to the Chris Gaines stuff, and it's really rock. Like, he completely changes his voice.
Yeah.
And I think, like, so I know he's a fan of Freddie Mercury. I know he's a fan of Elton John. I know he's a fan of Kiss. And I think that this project was him trying to explore that, and I think he does a really good job.
I know.
It's like the problem with Chris Gaines was the weird publicity. It was essentially a publicity stunt. Like, he changed, for people who don't know, like, this guy's usually wearing a cowboy hat and cowboy boots and, like, is kind of, like, a little bit overweight. And he, like, lost all that weight and looks like Prince almost. Like, he, like, has this, like, basically a K-pop haircut.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's like bangs going down, eyeliner, black makeup. And he pretended to be this, and this is true, he pretended to be an Australian-born sex addict rock star. He went on TV as Chris Gaines.
Oh, really?
He went on Saturday Night Live as Chris Gaines.
Okay.
They did a VH1 Behind the Music special that's really famous, where it's so obvious that it's Garth Brooks.
Yeah.
But he's trying to, they tried to make it into this alter ego. And what I think is interesting about it is I think that the country music industry is really restrictive.
Mm.
And I think any other artist, you know, if Lou Reed wanted to make a country album, Lou Reed would make a fucking country album.
Yeah,
like, it would just
would have worked.
That would have worked, right?
Yeah.
But I think Nashville and the way that whole industry works is that doesn't – he couldn't be Garth Brooks and change his sound. He has that built-in fan base that has bought him so much fame.
Right.
He can't betray them.
Yeah, yeah.
So he felt this need to do this big thing, which ended up backfiring because the album is really good, except for, I think, moments where he plays too much into it being a publicity stunt. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I think if it had been like, hey, Garth Brooks is making a rock album, I think, like, I think it would have been more successful because it is really good.
Yeah, I know.
It may even be, like, the place to start.
I know, yeah.
Do you agree? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're right. Yeah. Well, yeah, definitely. Because, like, as I said, he's completely different. He's got this, like, high-pitched voice.
Right.
Which he doesn't have when he's just, like, Garth Brooks.
No, he sings down low.
I know. It's just so weird. But I got a bit frustrated when I discovered this song because I was like, okay, who's this guy, Chris Gaines? And I wanted to listen to a bit more, you know, and I'd end up always like on the Garth Brooks page and I was like, that's not the same guy, is it? And because like I didn't know him, so he looked nothing like Chris Gaines, and I was like, this is so confusing.
It's
is
super
it
confusing.
The same guy or not? But yeah, now that I know that they are the same guy, yeah, but it's just hard, you know, like to see the difference, and then you're just like, okay, they're not like two separate blokes, it's like the actual same guy. But yeah, I think maybe I'd like Chris Gaines a bit more than Garth Brooks because I'm French, you know, and because it sounds a bit more like what I would listen to, because as you said, it's got so many influences, and you can tell this guy actually loves music and is really curious about it, and he likes to listen to all kinds of stuff, really. But yeah, I don't know, there's something a bit more familiar to me in this Chris Gaines thing. So, yeah, maybe just give a listen to Chris Gaines and then Garth Brooks.
And good luck finding it, because it's really hard to listen to. It's really hard to find.
I know. It's not on Spotify.
No.
This is so sad.
The only thing I could find on YouTube was, like, there's all these tributes.
Yeah.
It's like Nashville's tribute to Chris Gaines. Like, I don't want to hear that. It's like someone else.
I know.
You know? And no one has, like, he truly has a really unique voice. His mom, I don't know if you read about his mom. His mom was a famous singer.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, his mom was a singer, and she always had the kids doing music. And I think you can tell there are certain people who, like, specifically singers, if they've grown up singing and they have, like, a background in singing, they usually have phenomenal voices.
Yeah.
And I think he's got one of those just, like, show-stopping voices. Even though he doesn't always – if you just listen to the country stuff, you wouldn't – there are times where I think you hear it. I think he really pushes that register. But he can get in that Freddie range. And I think you really hear it. And, again, I haven't listened to all of Chris Gaines stuff, but I think you hear that more in the Chris Gaines stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Have you got any last words about him?
No, I feel like we've chatted
a lot about him.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about him. No, I just think, you know, it's just always fun to kind of explain this kind of culture to French people. And I guess, like, one last thing I will say is just comparing what – it got me thinking a lot about why certain things are popular in France and why certain things are popular in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one thing that's hard to understand for French people maybe about country music is – Americans, and I think this comes from British people a little bit, we need to be reassured. There's a lot of, like, we are the culture of Hollywood and happy endings, and even things like Charles Dickens, I think. Even though Charles Dickens can be really dark and sad at sometimes, it usually ends, I feel like, in a somewhat reassuring note. Obviously, there's exceptions to that, but this is, you know, still a Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens guy, right? And I think French culture, one of the things that is hard for me as an American, but that challenges me in a way that I love, you guys don't need that at all. There's so many French things that, like, this it's so fascinating to me because, like, the Parisian ideal that we have of, like, Edith Piaf is an American view on Paris.
Yeah.
It's not – it's totally at odds with really – I remember, like, I'll give you an example because I feel like I'm being kind of obtuse with what I'm saying, but, like – do you know the song La Complainte de la Butte?
Yeah, sure.
So when I was in high school, I came across that song, and I was listening to a lot of Jeff Buckley and trying to get it, and I was like, you know, he was interested in Piaf and stuff like that. And I don't know if Piaf ever did that song specifically, but I loved Rufus Wainwright's version, for example.
It's one of my
favorite songs. And I remember I was kind of listening to that song a lot, falling in love with this idea of France and this, like, Parisian cliche. And then I learned what that song is talking about. Oh my God.
I mean, pretty dark, isn't it?
It's super dark. And that was a theme. The more I dove into chanson française, there's so many bleak songs.
True.
And it's the same. It goes through literature. So many films are like L'écume des jours is like,
this is so,
everyone fucking dies at the end of that book.
So depressing.
So depressing. And that's like a big thing in France. And I think, country music and Christmas music and, like, so many things that are just, like, really American that don't export well are just super reassuring. And I think that there was, like, that was one thing I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, but you know what? I think it's interesting because I think you've got a point when it comes to music. I completely agree with you. Like, we are so much darker than you guys are. But, like, recently I talked about, I'm sure you've seen it or heard of it, the show The Office.
Yeah.
I think this is different when it comes to movies, for example, or series, because, like, we've got a French version of The Office, which is bad, really bad. There's the American version and there's the UK version.
Right.
Living in the UK, this is when I discovered The Office, the UK version, and I loved it. But it is so bleak, like, you've got all those characters who are kind of, like, depressed about everything. They hate the jobs and they hate their boss and everything. Whereas in the American version, you've got this boss who's, like, he's really bad at his job, but people like him because he's still really sweet, you know?
Yeah.
And you've got this reassuring thing still, like, people still like him and he's sweet in the end. Whereas in the UK version, he's just really bad, really. And French people will like the American version so much more than the UK version. I'm the only one who likes the UK version better because, I don't know, I like the humor more. But this is interesting because I think that when it comes to movies, even if we have pretty dark films and series, French people are going to like the American way more than the UK or even the French way. Maybe it's like a generation thing, though. Maybe we're getting a bit lighter, brighter in a way of thinking. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. We are very depressed in France, really.
At least traditionally, yeah. The US-UK office is such a good thing to bring. It's such a great example because that is like where people debate on that all the time.
All the time, like same language, but such different cultures, though.
It's fascinating.
It is really interesting. I could speak about that for hours, but unfortunately we can't.
Yeah, I know we've probably gone on for a while already.
Well, thank you very much, then.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. This is great to come in here and talk about music, and it's great to be here.
My pleasure. Bye.